Right. Okay. So we're going through this pedagogic approach, which is called green pedagogy. And the reason we need to go through it is because, as far as I understand, this is a pedagogy that has been developed at your institution specifically. Is that right?
That's right, the University College for Agrarian and Environmental Pedagogy tried to develop a pedagogy, a concept of pedagogy, which includes the all dimensions of education for sustainable development.
So
So
you are in Vienna, you're in Austria.
I'm
So you are this has been developed in Austria in German, and I think that one of the challenges we have is translating it from the German to the English, and I hope that we can clear up a few misunderstandings as we go along, as we go through this.
That's right.
Yeah. And one thing that I want to say is that we are looking at a visual representation of green pedagogy, and it looks very complicated. But one of the important things is this spiral, which tells you that green pedagogy is not something that you can do in one lesson and then you do something completely different in another lesson. It's a habit of mind. It's an approach, and it's something that students and teachers build on every time they meet. So this is why we have this spiral, because I know that we were taken to task for concentrating on a lesson or maybe three lessons as a unit. And we were taken to task because somebody said to us, well, this is an approach, you can't just do it in one lesson. But we have to start somewhere. So we started with one lesson or a set of lessons, but this spiral really shows that it's a process. And I think that if you were thinking about any other pedagogical approach, like, oh, I want my students to be critical thinkers, or I want my students to have a growth mindset, it's not something that you just do in one lesson. It's something that you have to do throughout the school year. So that's the reason for the spiral. So I'm thinking you would agree with that.
I will agree with it. And if you remember, we discussed with our course participants if green pedagogy is every day able, it's able to make it every day. And I think the green pedagogy shows us a circle or a kind of spiral, how to make learning processes for a growing mindset. And it's not the big target or the aim that we follow step by step each lesson. The big target is to confront people, young people, with different values, with different perspectives. And the big aim is to give them at the end a vision or a possibility that they could create their own values based on our teachers' input. And when you remember, we also discussed that it's a kind of, or it's forbidden to overwhelm, to overpower young people and changing their values, changing their mindset based on teachers' thinking and teachers' values. So the green pedagogy gives us the possibility that students, learners can create their own values, their own mindset based on different learning materials, step by step, and not like teachers' mindset should go on learners' mindset, because there is something more and many more perspectives which could be part of a mindset of a student, not only the thinking or the mindset of a teacher.
That's a very important point, actually, that we mustn't impose, we teachers mustn't impose our values on our students. So this is one important aspect of the green pedagogy, is that it's a way of trying to get the students to discover things for themselves and to make their own values based on what they discover.
Yes. I think that's, for education, for sustainable development, one of the very, very valuable things, that we make a distance to shocking young people with pictures from developing countries, from nature destroyment or something else, and let them out of the learning process without a vision, without that they feel unconscious or powerless or helpless and think, oh, I could not change anything. Our aim in this pedagogical view is that we can empower young people to take part on sustainability processes on the earth and do not feel powerless. And therefore, a mindset is necessary, but also a vision. And in this green pedagogy spiral, and in the steps of, in this learning steps of green pedagogy, we should come to the position to have a deconstruction, that we stimulate an situation, for example, which is possible, and then that we create a vision. But also the last step, the reflection and so on, is very necessary, that students come to the point that they can take a look what is possible in their environment, in their state of life, in their peer group, in their workplace or something else.
Yeah, so this already shows us that the green pedagogy approach is it's very comprehensive, and it requires a great change of perspective. But we're going to try and bring it down to a local level and a short-term level, and we're going to try and take us through the six stages of green pedagogy as shown in the diagram. But what we've discussed so far just shows us that what we're doing here is we're just looking at one tiny part of what might be. So we have at the bottom of this spiral the six stages of a lesson or series of lessons that begins with something called confrontation and goes on with something called reconstruction, intervention, interaction, deconstruction, and meditation. And it all sounds quite strange and overwhelming. So we're going to take as an example one specific lesson and try and go through how you could go through these six stages. And we can talk later about whether we need to do the six stages every time, whether we need to do them in order and so on. But we'll just take us through a sample lesson. And maybe you could give a short introduction as to what the lesson is about and the basic objective, and then we'll go through the six stages.
Mm-hmm. During the prophesis course, we need a template or a kind of good practice model for learning activity planning, and therefore we create a first good practice learning example for a series of lessons, and we called it "The Menu Today Can Change Your World Tomorrow." And based on this, I will try to explain and show you a view behind our thinkings when we prepared this lesson. And this lesson, "The Menu Today Can Change Your World Tomorrow," should open learners' mindset for how to create menu plans for different target groups, for example, because it's for vocational education. We take different target groups, for example, a kindergarten or a school or an elderly home or a hospital. And there we take a look to the menu plans and create different possibilities to make them more sustainable. And when we take a look in this lesson planning, at first we discussed a very long time what are competencies in a professional, from the professional view, what students or learners have to learn. And every person, it's in schools and it's in vocational education, also in businesses, or company-based vocational education, you have a kind of plan, a kind of curriculum, what the young learners have to learn, and therefore professional competencies are necessary. But I want to add something more, and these are the sustainability competencies which we discussed. And we found out during our pedagogical discussions, and if you remember, that we always have to learn professional competencies in the same time and in the same topic and in the same lesson, like sustainability competencies. And therefore, our lesson plannings do not have only professional view, also always the sustainability view. And this was the first step. And when we go to
I just want to explain, we should say that we are operating in the context of home economics as a topic, as a subject area.
Yes, as a professional field.
Yeah, this is what we explored. And this approach could be adapted to other subject areas, but this is why the lesson is about menu planning, because it was in the home economics area.
Yes,
right. So you're going to take us through the six stages. And for example, when I first met this model, I had difficulty in distinguishing between, for example, confrontation, which is the first stage, and provocation, which is the third stage. Mm-hmm. But as you take us through the lesson, I'm sure it will become clearer. It seemed to me that this first stage, confrontation stage, could be linked to something which is thought to be very effective pedagogically, which is called conceptual change. And this is about letting learners say what they know, what they think they know about a topic, and before starting on a lesson. So instead of assuming that our learners know nothing about a topic, mm-hmm. almost certainly they come with good information and probably also bad information. And so the first stage is to find out what it is they know about a certain area by presenting them with a specific problem. So take us through the first stage of your lesson.
Mm-hmm. The first stage of our lesson, we discussed we want to make the confrontation and the problem analysis as the first point. And we discussed a long time how could we affect young peoples with this topic. And therefore, we discuss very often about learners' conceptions or everyday ideas of learners, because they are the point which is our starting point. And for example, in our good practice example, we have pictures with different meals, and you know, every person had an idea when they take a photo or a picture of a meal. And you know as well, today we live in a society where we make photos from our meals and place it in social media. It's called food porn. And every person had a very high emotional process when we take a look on pictures. And for the first step, we want to get their emotions. And therefore, the confrontation with a problem, the problem analysis, we choose these different pictures and make a sheet of paper. And then the picture was on a table, and there was different stages, and these pictures lay in the classroom, and the young people go from picture to picture and write their idea, what comes in their mind, their emotions, what they think about this picture. about this meal, which was on the picture, and write their impressions at this sheets. And so then they close the sheet. Yes, Anne?
Can I ask, what sort of pictures did you include? Were they, for example, clearly institutional meals and lavish meals and vegetarian meals? And what sort of pictures do you use?
We choose different pictures, for example, very traditional food. Then we choose provocating pictures, for example, insects. Then we choose pictures from hospitality meals on a table, on a tablet. Mm,
table.
Then we choose design food. It's called 3D food, which comes out from a machine, and it's and it look like normal food, but when you make the first bite, you know it's a kind of mousse. So it's for elderly people to make it appetized, but it's also very easy to eat it without teeth. So we take different kind of pictures, and also vegan pictures from vegan meals, and everything what comes in our mind, what could be a little bit of provocating and a little bit of very healthy and very unhealthy, and maybe also future thinking food or future food or trend food. And then the young people go from picture to picture and write their impressions. And what was very interesting when we tried out or conduct this lesson the first and second time, we found out that different persons had different emotions to that pictures. When others say, oh, it looks very ugly, others say it look perfect and I will eat it immediately. And so at the end, on these sheets, there are different meanings. And then the different groups of learners get the sheet and they open this sheet and look at the first impressions. And nearly every group began to laugh about the answers. And then there was the big question, what do the different comments demonstrate to you? And with these questions, they come to the answer that food is not for everybody the same, and emotions are always different. And that was the first stage, and it was very nice that to see that everybody has another idea of healthy food, of appetized food, and maybe of food which makes us lucky or sad or something else. And then they write on short cards what was the outcome for them, what was the demonstration for them. And with yes,
so already I can begin to see one area for why I was confused, because the pictures that you're talking about, they are very provocative. I bought my husband an insect snack bar for Christmas, and he said it was terrible. So that was very provocative. And yet we're talking about stage three is provocative. So that's why there was a little bit of confusion in my mind, because the pictures you describe are quite provocative and go beyond what I imagined you would be showing at that stage. So is it okay if we then move to the second stage, which is called here reconstruction? And then the question I had immediately was, what am I constructing again? Because reconstruction to me means I am constructing again something. Maybe this is more about a research phase. So is it time to move on to the second phase of the lesson?
Mm-hmm. And this second phase, the reconstruction, is the second stage also for a teacher, to take a look at learners' conceptions. And sometimes the everyday idea of different things from pupils or learners are quite wrong. Often in natural sciences, they have everyday ideas from different things which are wrong and which are necessary that they can understand their daily life. But on this reconstruction and research stage, we should try to confront learners with their conceptions and to try to change or to open these conceptions. And sometimes it's necessary to destroy these conceptions a little bit. Otherwise, it's in the learning process, they build the new learning content in old concepts. And if old concepts are wrong, the new learning content and materials and ideas will implement in wrong concepts. So the second stage is a kind of reconstruction. It's a kind of making of smashing down constructed ideas and make research, for example, how it looks like to get an idea, what is the problem, what is the basis of discussions. And if we come to our example, I will give you a short example how we reconstruct this. We gave anonymous menu yeah. plans for a week, for example, from the different institutions, a kindergarten, elementary school, or a Mensa of a university, or for example, a hospital or an elderly home, and then they should analyze the menu, what is for the week, based on their knowings about ingredients, based on their knowings about healthy food, based on the knowledge what these people need, or what are the needs of the target group. For example, elderly people need meals which they could eat, and which is not a problem with teeth or a problem with our gut or something else. And based on these, the students or the learners analyze these menu plans and write on the sheets, it's for example what the analysis shown, and for example to ingredients or to the target group needs. And on this stage, it's very interesting, nobody think about sustainability. Everybody think about individual needs and healthiness. And that was very interesting. And that brings us to the third stage. Mm-hmm. The intervention or the provocation or the bafflement. And
yes, and it has sometimes been translated as irritation. Mm-hmm. And I discovered recently that irritation in German means something quite different to what irritation means in English. So this is why I had a bit of a problem with it when you called it irritation sometimes.
Yes.
Irritation in English is when you get angry with somebody. It mm-hmm. can also be if I have an irritation in my eye because I have something in my eye, then, mm-hmm. but that is more what you mean in German, isn't it? Something that's bothering you because it's not quite right. And yes. It's making you think, and it's making you uncomfortable.
Yes, and in English, it's always a bad thing. Irritation is something bad. Yes. In German, irritation is a kind of thinking out of the box, that something is here which irritates my conceptions, maybe, and to help us to understand that there is something more than my concept of this. And this irritation we use in this green pedagogy, and it's only to provocate people once more, helping them thinking out of the box, thinking unconventional, thinking around the corner, or I do not know how I can explain it, or take a look behind something and get a new idea.
So how did you provoke the students who had just come up with their analysis of these different menus?
We prepare a set of posters, and this set of posters was for production, for processing and distribution of food, for consumption of food, and for waste management of food. And on these five posters, we had provoking pictures, or we placed provoking pictures. For example, in the production of food, we have pictures from animals in different kind of farms. That was very intensive. Economic farms and industrial farms, and then we have, for example, ecological farms where the animals can go on the green grass or to the forest and something else. And on the production, we try to make on these five steps on the production chain, we try to give pictures from different perspectives. And for example, in the processing of food, we have high differences in using detergents.
Yes,
or to use chemical ingredients, or to use different methods to produce or to process something. And in distribution, everybody knows that the distribution on the global distribution is a big problem, as well our food waste. And then we have the consumption. Also, the consumption gives us a huge amount of possibilities how to consume food, and on which places, and in restaurants, or at home, or with families, or alone, or something else. And then at least, and a very necessary step, and also mindset opening step, is the waste management at least. And there we also have pictures from waste problems on the earth, which are caused by choosing the false or the wrong menu. And based on these posters, we say to our learners that they will take a view on these five posters in a silent session. So they go from poster to poster and analyze their menu plan with the template for analyzing this plan, based on what comes in their mind when they take a look at these pictures.
And so I'm beginning to understand why the provocation cannot come at the beginning, because what you've done is you've got them to analyze a problem and come up with a solution. Sort of, I mean, because they've been looking at these menus and they've been deciding on the nutritional value, the aesthetics maybe, and so on. Mm-hmm. And then you challenge them with, well, this is how the food in those menus is produced, and this is the effect of the food in those menus on consumption and so on. So you get them to take a step further in the implications of what they were doing in the menu analysis stage. Is that right?
This is right. And it's based on our discussions that if we analyze menu plans, and it's a very necessary step, we only and always need take a look on individual needs, and we never take a look on ecological needs or the needs of the earth, for example, or the needs of people in developing countries. And so with this step, this reconstruction and research step, we try to open the mind of learners for the needs of other people, of the world, of nature, and so on. And it was very helpful for them, because they say, oh no, this menu plan, I can't read something about how this meat was produced, and I can't read something about where these cereals have come from. Are these local or regional cereals, or are these cereals from another country or from another continent? And that's why they say, with this menu plan, it's not possible to write a right plan or to make an analysis. We need additional informations in menu plans that we can say it's healthy or it's a sustainable menu plan.
Yeah. So then we come on to the interaction stage.
Then we come to an interaction and analytical discussion. And this was a plenary discussion about which influences could the knowledge about the production chain, so the food system, have to the menu planning and eating behaviors of people. And then in this plenary discussion, the learners discussed which criteria are relevant for our target group to choose the right meal for the menu plan. And they go from picture to picture and write what they want to know about this food and what they want to know about these processes, which criteria they want to know about production, about processing, about distribution, and about the waste of food. And then they make on small cards as well, they write the answers or the criteria which they want to know. And in this analytical discussion, they found out that it's interesting that you know how these ingredients were produced or which ingredients are in. And is it chemically produced, or is it naturally produced, and so on. And they find a lot of points what they want to know about the food on these different five stages.
Can I ask, did you know these students beforehand, or was this just a one-off lesson that you tried?
I tried the lessons, and as well in Germany, the lesson was tried by our colleague, and I know my students from I saw them before one time, and this was our second come together.
So how did they react to this stage? Were they enthusiastic and engaged?
Yes, they were very engaged, because if you could imagine, you have to take a look at pictures and go from wall or poster to poster, and you could not speak with your partner about it because it's a kind of silent sessions, and in your mind there are different emotions and different ideas and different feelings. And when I opened this discussion in the classroom and say, so how do you feel, what comes in your mind, then it was a kind of explosion, and it was a kind of everybody wants to say something. And as for a teacher, it's very necessary to moderate this session, I have to say, because some people are frustrated, some people are overwhelmed, some people are overpowered, and some people feel powerless. And in this session, all these feelings come to the to the plenary discussion. And therefore, you have, or for me as a teacher, it was very necessary to find a way of moderate this session. And I choose it like this, that we go from poster to poster together and discuss what comes in your mind, which criteria you want to need to know about. And it was very, very engaged, a very engaged discussion, leaded by students and learners.
So is this the deconstruction stage now?
No, the deconstruction stage we are now. And for us, it was clear we could not let out persons with these feelings. Mm. So they have different feelings and they know, I want to know more about my menu. And for example, I also have the weekly menu plan of the school where we had this session. And one group had this cool menu plan. And then they know, oh, today in the lunchtime I eat that meal, but I do not know what I ate. Mm. And so it was very interesting for them. They said, oh, we want to know what we have on our plates and we want to know what is in our in front of us when we eat it. And therefore, we ask students, how could we overcome this problem and find solutions to create something where we can show it in menu plans how sustainable these meals are. And this was a very, very interesting and a very, I say, creative session, because they discussed how could we show in menu plans the production and the process, the processment of this food. And they think about short icons which they create, for example, for ecologic meat, or icons for local cereals, or icons for clean water, or icons for different things. Also chemicals, which are chemical-free food. And with these small icons, they say, if it's placed in the menu plan, then you can get sure that it's well produced and where it come from. And this was the deconstruction stage. So they develop icons for the different stages, what gives us a view in the production chain. And we know on the first view what it means. For example, if there is pork meat and there is a small icon, which was very creative, a short icon on this pork meat, then you know how it was produced. And they feel very happy about it, because it's a kind of solution for the problem.
It's also very doable for them in their situation, in their context.
It's very doable, and because we have vocational students, we open their mind that it's necessary also for students, also for in hospitals, for people and for elderly people, that they get a great feeling when they eat their meals. And they think, oh, it's necessary to show them how it's produced. And I think they create a mindset for the target group as well, but also for ecological, not only social parts, also ecological parts of the menus. And with these icons, they were very happy. And they say if they have the possibility to change the menus or change the meals in this later business field, then they will immediately give short icons to the menu plans to show people how it was produced or how it was processed. And then when they want to use the icon, they know that they have to think about all these production stages, these five stages. And I think it's a kind of mindset of changing minds, changing values about how menus are produced or meals are produced.
So then the rounding off section stage about evaluating and reflecting.
Yes, at the end, we want to create a kind of opportunity and a kind of motivation and willingness to do it later on. And therefore, we open one discussion, and this was also a very, very interesting discussion. We opened this discussion with the question, what will be the effects if all guest-oriented businesses will support healthy and sustainable menu plans? And at first, they think about it, and then they said, oh, we have differences in many, 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 many ways. And then they found out that if every business will work like this in a region or in a community or in a country or on a continent, then it comes to an effect which is incredibly high. And there, that's what should give them a kind of vision and a kind of willingness to make a change at first, a change in your part, in your business, where you have the possibility to change it, but also to affect other people with this motivating aspect or with this perspective. This was the first part of reflection, and the second part, which is very necessary, to come back to the learner, to the individual. And we asked them, which new aspects do you have learned today? And it was also very, very nice to hear on which different levels they think that they learned a lot. Not only that they think they learned about something, about the knowledge, they also talk about their values. And this was very interesting for us to hear that they know that something in their mind was changed after 2 hours. And
So that's the six stages. We didn't miss anything out, did we?
No, we do not miss the stages out. And always when I produce lesson plans for my students or for my learners, then I try to take all these six stages. Sometimes a stage only needs 1 minute or 2 minutes. Mm. But for me, it's a kind of guideline and a kind of helping steps, learning steps, where I think about, do I need it? Yes, no, and in which way I need it. And it's not always 10, 15, 20 minutes or an hour, which I need for a step. Sometimes, yes. If you have a series of lessons, 5, 6, 7 lessons, then you have time in between to use more. But sometimes it's also only 1 minute, for example, and it's enough. And when you say, oh, this step is not necessary because of, then you have think about this step and then you can let it out of the plan. But mostly at 99% of my lesson plannings, I use all six steps.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually, because I think that was one of the questions that our participants had. Is this something that you could do regularly? So you're saying the answer is yes.
Yes. Yes. It's not about how intensive you use it. It's about think about it if you need it. And if you say yes, it's okay. And if you say no, it's as well okay. But think about if you need it and in which way you could need it or could implement it.
And can I ask you a very provoking question now? Because yes, one of our participants said or asked, don't the students get bored of being provoked? What would you say to that?
It's a very, very, very good question. And I, for example, I could tell you a short story of my personal life. And I have the problems with my daughter to speak about the use of handy and computers. Mm. And I provoke her often with newspaper articles or something else. But what was missing, and then it was boring for her to be provoked from me, I do not give her a vision, and I do not give her alternatives for her lazy time or leisure time. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem with provocation is if you overwhelm people and make them feeling powerless or make them feeling helpless with the situation, then it's boring to be provoked because you want to get safe from this process. Yeah. Or you want to secure yourself from this process. If you take a go in your mind and think, if I will provoke my daughter with this newsletter article, what is the next step?
Mm.
And now today I have a very interesting provocative newsletter article, and it's in front of me, and I'm waiting for her coming home from school. And it's about that young people get short seeing, you know, kurzsichtig.
Oh, short sight. Yeah, short sight.
Short sight. Because of having this handy all the day in front of their eyes. And after then, when I show her this article, I want to invite her to go out with me and make something in the horse stable together, which is time together, social time together, and it's something in the nature. And so it's a kind of another, giving them another option.
Mm.
And I think in pedagogical processes, it's needed to give them a vision, an alternative way, another option. It's our aim and our task to do it as a teacher. Not saying this is my value, take it, please. Mm. Open their minds for changing their values and giving them visions for the future. Then I think provocation is one of the interesting, most interesting, and one of the inspiring things we have.
That's a wonderful, wonderful note to end on. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Anne.